For a little bit this afternoon, the topic I want to discuss we'll find in 2 Samuel, the 12th chapter. And this is when Nathan confronts David. And no doubt we're going to, or we've heard lessons about this before. I'm going to look at this probably from a perspective, maybe you have, maybe you haven't heard before, but nevertheless, so... this is after David has ordered that Uriah be killed, and the Lord sends Nathan to David to confront him. And how Nathan does that, I'm not sure exactly if this was... I assume that the Lord spoke to Nathan the prophet specifically what to tell David. We're not necessarily told that's what's happened, but we know that the Lord sent Nathan to David, and Nathan tells him this parable of two men, one rich, one poor, and the poor man had a little ewe lamb that he had purchased ever since. The lamb was obviously a baby, it was a ewe lamb, and was very near and dear to this man and this family. And then the rich man had a friend stay, or we assume a friend, a traveler stayed with him, and didn't want to prepare anything that he had, so he went and took this poor man's ewe lamb and prepared it as a meal for this traveler. And David heard this, and he was furious. You remember the story. He flew, you know, he's flying off the handle. I can kind of see it. In my mind. Nathan told David that he was actually that individual. You are that man. And reality hit David, because we know what transpired previously. And we have, and I don't know about you, I've heard a lot of lessons indicating that we need more people like Nathan that will say, you are the man. And I would agree with that statement. We need people to do that. I would add in a word. We need more qualified individuals. I don't think the world is short of anyone that would that likes to point the finger to somebody else and tells what other people are doing wrong. I don't think there's any shortage of that. I would say that there is a need for more qualified individuals. And I don't want to diminish this point at all. You know, of the teaching of Galatians 6 and 1, that those who are spiritual to go out and rescue those that are erring. But if you remember correctly, in 1 Samuel, the 15th chapter, Samuel confronts Saul. Here we have another scenario of a prophet confronting a king about a command that was not obeyed. The Lord had told Saul to go and destroy an enemy and to totally obliterate them, wipe them out. Don't save anybody. Cattle, the king, everybody. But that was not what Saul had done. They had brought the king back to kind of make fun of him and poke fun of him. And they brought the cattle back for sacrifices. That's what Saul said. And when Samuel confronted Saul then, he said, you didn't obey the Lord. You are the man. Thou art the man, as the King James Version puts it. And Saul said, but I did obey the Lord. And to which Samuel replied, then what is then the sound of cattle in my ear? I always thought that was a funny phrase, a funny way to put it. It kind of reminds me of a parent, you know, has told the child, all right, don't eat any cookies, because we're going to have dinner soon. And then, or don't eat a brownie, because we're gonna eat dinner soon. And then the parent discovers that the child has eaten the brownie or the cookie, and the child says, "I didn't have a cookie, or I didn't eat a brownie." Then what's this little piece of chocolate you have on your face? Anyone that has been a parent that has probably had some situation like that occur in their house. That's kind of what reminds me of Samuel confronting Saul. But here we have an example, and I bring this up because there is a missing ingredient that I have found in this teaching. That although we do need those people that will confront others, especially in difficult situations, but it fell on deaf ears in Saul's case. He justified himself. He did everything to avoid the fact that he was in the wrong. But what did David say? And this is what I want to really get to tonight. What did David say? His response to the entire situation. He said, "I have sinned." He said, "I have sinned." David fessed up to it. He said, "You're right, Nathan. I am that man." See, in my view, and then not to diminish, you know, the teaching, like I said, of Galatians 6 and 1 and others, there's a passage in James that described that one who would rescue an erring one from their way is, it talks about that. But I would also add that we need more people like David that will say, "I am the man," not to behave in the kind of way that he did towards Bathsheba and Uriah and that sort of thing. Obviously, we're not excusing that. But when we do make mistakes and when we do err and we're confronted with it, we say, "I am the man. I have sinned," and make it right. And that's what we want to talk about. What do we learn from David in his response? Number one, humility. The Bible is not short on any sort of passages. James 4 and 6, Matthew 18 and 4, Philippians, the whole chapter of 2 Philippians just about talks about it. 1 Peter 5 and 5 all talk about humility and the virtues of humility, the different aspects of it. It takes humility to admit when we're wrong about something. We see that in the previous king's life, Saul had no shortage of arrogance. And it was very much and he started out well. And that's even what Samuel told him. He said, "When you first started out as a king, you were little in your own eyes. But now you've let all this power go to your head." And I'm certain, and maybe that's kind of what David, the place that David had started to get to. This place where he felt like he could maybe sort of get away with anything at this point. Maybe that's what he was thinking. Or maybe he was just trying to, in as unobtrusive as a way as possible, cover up his mistake, because he knows he was already convicted of it. That's why he was trying to cover it up, because he knew that this isn't a good situation. And, you know, the myriad of ways he tried to cover it up ultimately led to Uriah's death. But when he said, "I am sinned, I am wrong," it takes humility. It takes humility in not only our relationship to God to do that, but our relationship to our brethren, our relationship to each other, our relationship to our spouses, to our children, when we make mistakes, to be the one to admit You know what? I was wrong about that, like David did. Secondly, David took personal responsibility. He took responsibility for his own actions, and he fessed up to them, and he didn't try to cover them up. You know, what I admire probably more than anything about David in his response to this is his actions afterward. You know, as a result of his sin, God told David that your son will die. One of the consequences. He said, your son will die and the sword will not leave your house. Your house will always, there will always be strife in your home because you did this thing. Samuel said that the Lord has removed your sin from you, but there will be consequences. And we see this here, and we see this in later on throughout the book, the rest of 2 Samuel and David's troubles in his house, that despite the troubles that came up, he would always seek to do what was the next best right thing to do. Sometimes he was stuck really between a rock and a hard place, particularly with his son Absalom. He was put in a lot of difficult situations. We did some study recently on that, but so I won't get too much into that. But really specifically, the kind of what happens next after Nathan goes home. Now, I'm not sure the timeline between when the child is born and when Nathan shows up. I'm kind of thinking that there has been, you know, some time here to bond with the child. I'm not thinking that the baby's born and then that same day Nathan shows up, there he is, and the child lives a week. Maybe that's what happened. The scriptures don't really necessarily say. But I've got an inclination that there was some time that had elapsed here. And a couple reasons for that. I won't get into them right now. But anyway, we're told, after Nathan goes home is when this judgment is. Right before he goes home, when Nathan gets there and pronounces the judgment, this is when all this happens. He goes home, and the child doesn't live but a week until after Nathan leaves. For 7 days, and David wept and fasted and prayed for days and days and days, for an entire week. To me, and he's pleading with God for this child's life, to please save the child. Who knows? Because, I mean, it would have been the child's life or David. You know? It's what Nathan told him. He said, the Lord is removed from sin. He won't require your life. But he will take the life of the child. And so David fasts and prays and weeps, mourns over this child because he says his servants, you know, after they deliver him the news that he is that the child is dead, he said, and they, you know, they he gets up, cleans himself up, he goes, he worships, and that's this is the point that probably blows me away. Than any other facet is he goes, and after all this happens, he goes and worships. He's done this great wrong. He knows it. And then he gets this sharp judgment from God. And once that is fulfilled, instead of being angry, and I mean, can you imagine how many? I mean, it seems to be a popular thing that people say. You know, they get angry at God about things. Can you imagine how angry at God some people would get over something like this. The child didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't the child's fault. Can you imagine how some people would just get so angry with God over this, over something like this happening, but not David? David knew that God was just fulfilling what he said. And still, after all of this, he has the humility, I guess this is another way of David showing his humility, and personal responsibility, that he knows that, it was his fault. And yet he acknowledges that. I believe that he acknowledges that by going, one of the ways, by going and he goes to worship. He worships the Lord, rededicates himself, as it were. And he says, his servants ask, after he does all this, and once he comes back home, he requests that food be brought to him, and his servants question him on it, and they're like, why did you do this? When the child was alive, you wouldn't eat, you barely slept. Why? And David, says, in a manner of speaking, he says, I know the Lord was just doing what he said he would do. But, who knows? Maybe he would have listened. Maybe he would have. But now, the child is dead. He's not coming back to me. But I will go to him. Knowing that David, side note here, David knew that the child was somewhere and that there was a hope of him joining his son. That's what I don't believe that was just a statement that, the child is dead and one day I will die. Now, I think there's something more to that. I think David knew in some way that there was something more to life than just this, passing, even though the Old Testament doesn't say a whole lot about heaven or hell that I've, read, that I know about and can recall. Talks about, the Psalms talk about Sheol and that sort of thing. Anyway, that's a tangent. David's personal responsibility. And lastly, number three, David accepted the truth for what it was. Nathan confronted David with the truth. You are the man. And David said, you're right. I am. He accepted the truth for what it was and how he measured up to it. He didn't try to justify what he had done. He didn't try to make it seem like he didn't do anything wrong like Saul did, his predecessor. It reminded me of something that Jesus says in John the 3rd chapter, verses 19 through 21, to which I'm paraphrasing. But he says, the light has come into the world, and people love darkness more than they love the light because their deeds were evil. And that anyone, or that anyone who does evil hates the light because the light exposes their evil deeds. But anyone that loves and lives by the truth comes to the light so that their works may be seen and may be shown to be accomplished and approved by God. And that's exactly what happened here in David and Nathan, in David's case. Nathan brought light onto something that was done in the darkness, and it was exposed for what it was. James also talks about the Word of God being the perfect, like a mirror. And that when we look into this mirror, we see ourselves for who we really are when it measures up to God's standard, to God's word. And David knew that he was off the mark. He has missed the mark. But he didn't try to justify what he had done. He saw where he was and he made adjustments. You know, I think it's pretty remarkable that if you look in the records of Second Samuel and then 1 Kings, 2 Kings, when David is mentioned and other kings are mentioned, that there is one instance that the Bible talks about David as one who lived basically in harmony with God's law, except for that one time in the instance of Bathsheba. And really, I only remember that phrase being written once. The other times that David is written about, he's written about someone that has lived by God's law. In fact, I mean, he was the one that wrote, the man that is blessed meditates on God's law. He loves God's law and meditates on it day and night. Written by David himself. And David experienced both sides of that coin. He experienced that detachment from relationship with God for a brief time until Nathan kind of set him on a course correction. But anyway, so that's what we learn I feel like those are some of the things that we can learn from David. Number one is humility, is taking personal responsibility, personal accountability for his actions. And then number three, facing the truth, facing the music, so to speak, and owning up to it and changing behavior. So those are my remarks. If anyone needs to obey the gospel or make some wrong right, please do so while we stand and while we sing.